Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Off The Ball Rugby.
It feels like a summer tour, really, you know, and I think it's exciting to have a competition, and we certainly want to be, you know, at the business end of it come November, but it feels like a tour. And
join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Special guest co-host, you're very welcome to Off The Ball Breakfast on this Friday morning. 087-9180-180 is our WhatsApp number. And that we have an email address these days, don't we?
Yes.
Breakfast@offtheball.com. Very professional. If you're listening to us only now, but you prefer to see us, and why not, go on YouTube, type in Off The Ball. Click on the live thumbnail and you will see the man I just spoke to there initially. Enda Ka. Hello. Calling all Endas. Darragh McNaughton.
Colm.
Good morning.
How are things?
How are you? And the aforementioned special guest co-host is the multiple All-Ireland winner and All-Star, Seamus Flanagan. What means more to you, the one All-Star or the five All-Irelands?
Oh, politically correct, five All-Irelands.
You buzzing? Semi-final weekend. Are you buzzing from the perspective of a hurling fan, of a Limerick fan, of a hurling analyst? How'd you look at it?
Bit of everything. Mm. Bit of everything. Combination of all. I suppose it's been under publicised. I suppose to largely alert.
It's wild, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's won't be happening this time next week with the football.
No, I know, and it's scary to think that that's the route that maybe it's going down. The less said, the better. I thought we were kind of over that side of things, but it's odd. Yeah, it's strange. But come here again. The teams that are involved obviously don't care. It's not their prerogative to promote the game. Mm. But I suppose standing back and having the wide angle view of hurling in a broader sense, it's strange that it's kind of gone like that.
And at the same time, right, so little is said before these huge hurling occasions. We want more promotion. And there you have Shane O'Donnell doing the rounds yesterday. We will get to this, of course, imminently. We have our own video. We had Willow Callaghan speaking with the great Shane O'Donnell yesterday. And there's a few things that have been taken from this, Seamus, including head-high challenges. But within this interview, rounds that he was doing with people, also announced that this is the end for Shane O'Donnell.
Surprising that doesn't take the headline.
It's funny, we were talking about this morning, right?
Yeah, over everything. That's huge news for Clare, because it's the end of an era. Like, as in, you think when Shane O'Donnell burst onto the scene 3-3 in All-Ireland final, where Davy Fitz told him, 24 hours prior to that, that he was starting?
Yeah.
And the culmination of his career ending so, well, maybe not meekly after this weekend, but so subtly and maybe under the radar. It's strange way to bow out. Whether it be the rallying cry to Clare players and Clare fans to come out and support and to, for like that, I know he doesn't want to determine it as the last dance, but one last hurrah maybe. Strange timing.
Very strange indeed. We'll get to that in more depth soon. But first, we got to recap on a night of nights at the World Cup. So, working backwards in a game that I challenged anyone in Ireland to have watched in its entirety if you were not Swiss or Algerian. But Switzerland did beat Algeria 2-0. And then we'll start yesterday evening as well with Spain beating Austria 3-0. Very, very comfortable for Spain. That third goal, did you see that third goal? The football being played. Beautiful. This is the Spanish at their best. But the game that's going to capture many imaginations and possibly missed by a lot of people because of its start time at midnight. Portugal 2, Croatia 1. Gonçalo Ramos got the winner deep, deep into that game. Cristiano Ronaldo scored a penalty. But of course, the controversy here is, should Croatia have had an equaliser to make it 2-2?
Yeah, so they equalised very, very late on. And it went to VAR.
Mm-hmm.
And VAR decided it was offside because it maybe hit a Croatia player on the way and caused it to be offside. Now, the ball, we have spoken about before, has a sensor in it, and the sensor picked up the touch. So it did touch him. How much it touched him is actually impossible to tell based on any of the angles or any of the slow-mo. It basically scrapes his head on the way down.
But you only get one angle in the VAR check?
Yeah, from behind the goal. It was that behind the goal.
There's a bit of consternation about the lack of angles being used to see if it touched or not. And therefore conspiracies about why they allowed the goal to happen.
What are we doing?
Yeah, but Andy, we're also talking about the lack of the...
He has something to say here.
No,
he
no.
He started with a headline.
And a sigh.
Now, what? You feel strong about this?
We see, there's a slow motion replay right behind the head. So you'd see the change in direction if there was a touch. If there's not a change in direction, has he touched the ball?
Tree Forest thing. Is it?
What do you mean?
Like, he could have still touched it, and it could have still gone where it was going anyway.
He doesn't touch it, though, does he?
Inconclusive. That's the whole thing. Like, is it? That's the conclusion. Well, it's one angle, it looks like it does.
Like, we're talking... Is it inconclusive, though, if we have conclusive evidence that it has touched it?
You've no problem with this.
I don't like that it is where football is, but we do have empirical evidence that this has happened, because we have a chip in the ball that measures whether or not it has been touched. Yeah. And the chip measured that it had been touched by a Croatia player.
Sorry, am I detecting that your issue isn't the process of checking? It's you actually just don't think it was touched.
I don't think it was touched based on what I saw, but at the same time, I don't like the... I think that's going too far. Because last year, that's not called as offside, and I don't think anyone's aggrieved by the decision at all. So why are we doing it? It's over-officiating of football. And that is the way it's going, but it's just, I don't know. Like, if you're looking at it and by the eye, it doesn't appear to hit him, then that's enough, isn't it? Because what is the touch? We don't know anything about what the sensor is picking up. Could it just have been a hair follicle? We don't know what that actually is yet. They haven't explained it. So we just have to take their word from it. Like you say, we have concrete evidence. We don't really...
Well, are you pro or anti the semi-automated offsides?
Pro.
Because that's sort of the same thing in the sense that we're leaving it up to the machines to make these decisions. Similar enough to what we see in Wimbledon.
But they do show us the result of it, though.
But they showed us the result of this as well. It's just different because it's not something that we can... interpret with our eyes.
Visualize and capture exactly what it means.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just that we're seeing that.
Should there not be
this exists, like a
sine wave wouldn't work. Like, you know, with ultra edge in cricket, you can see the sine wave at which point it hits the bat.
We've seen that. There's actually, I think we have the image here from VAR. You can actually see it up on screen there.
Oh, sorry,
I didn't see that.
Okay.
So this is where. But this wasn't shown live on the broadcast. I think that's
the
issue.
Okay,
but what I would have liked to have seen was if that's the touch off the Croatian player, why don't they show secondary the touch off the Portuguese player to verify and to encapsulate exactly how much of a touch there was?
Yeah, I think that's... I agree with you on that one.
That would probably
they're showing the one that they want us to see here. Why aren't they showing that it also touched the Portuguese player and his impact. So I do think, look, there's teething issues with all this tech. I don't think the tech should exist anyway. I'm on the record as being completely anti-VAR as a concept, but if we're using it and it does show that it touched the player, then you kind of have to go with the technology you're using. I don't know.
Like, fair enough, but it's an awful spectacle. And no one's happy with that. The Portuguese are happy because they got the decision.
It's an awful way to go out of a World Cup.
It's shocking.
It is.
Chances are they could have gone out as well, though. That's
100%. But I just hate this over-officiating. And someone in the comments put it well that the genie's out of the bottle now, so there's no going back. But that's not a game I want to watch if it's going like that, personally.
Cristiano Ronaldo scored again, though, from the penalty spot. He was on for 81 minutes in this game. He touched the ball in the box. How many times?
Go on.
One. The contact that he made with that penalty kick. So
He'll claim he had two more touches and that was very harshly ruled out for offside. That was a nice finish. But I mean, look, the Ronaldo debate's over, isn't it? He scored again. They took him off. They took him off.
Yeah.
With how long left?
9 minutes.
9 minutes. What score was it when he took him off?
It was 1-1, wasn't it?
Yeah. Took him off. He did it. You know, yeah. He took him off. I mean, this is this conversation is going to dwindle now. It's like this guy's going to play, and he actually will take him off. Now he took him off because he had to, I guess, because Portugal were up against him, he had no choice. And then I thought, oh, there'd be a big reaction of Ronaldo being subbed, and he kind of just shrugged his shoulders. I was like, all right. I think he literally had a word with himself. You could see kind of muttering to himself, and he went off. And I think people wanted a bit more of a rallying cry for the sub that was coming on the bench because he's the captain and all that, and he's Ronaldo, the talisman. But he was kind of more just like a player being subbed that's mildly disappointed. But it wasn't that big a deal. Like this conversation after the first game, Dior Congo was like, this guy is a liability. They may as well play with 10 players. Get him out. And he scored two against Uzbekistan. I was like, oh, he's going to stay now, isn't he? And he scored again. He scored.
That's what he's there to do.
Is anybody anti-Ronaldo here in this room that he should be out of the team?
That he should be out of the team?
Yeah, that he's a liability, that he's holding Portugal back. Because this was, like, people were screaming this after Portugal's first game.
Yeah.
It seems to have gone a bit quieter now.
No, he's still a liability to the team. They would still be better off without him. Do you think there's not players in the Portugal team that would have scored that goal?
Which goal? The penalty?
Penalty.
Well, yeah, but I mean, at the same time, you're going to back anyone in the Portugal squad to score a penalty, it's Ronaldo.
Bruno Fernandes?
Yeah, you could take it.
I would back Bruno Fernandes.
Well, look, I recall Bruno Fernandes taking a penalty at Man United when Ronaldo was on the pitch and he blazed it over the bar. It happens. Like, Ronaldo, I think he's a huge problem in the team, but I also think this is the other side of him. He's going to continue to play.
Well, this could be the last time against Spain, could be the last time we see him, according to his sister. His sister came out after the game speaking to Sport TV and said, enjoy it while it lasts. It's ending soon. The info I have from a reliable source, this is his last dance.
I'm hearing.
I wonder who her source is.
That's
their mum.
That's not the way that it ends. If the World Cup goes to Portugal in 4 years' time, are you telling me that he won't play in that World Cup?
What'd he be, 44, 45?
He's going to be there in some capacity. He has
manager.
To.
Manager.
Well, he is the manager. He was manager 10 years ago. Yeah, the Euros,
I was just going to say, yeah.
He'll be there in some capacity for sure. So they play Spain now. Spain look mightily good, but Austria are kind, aren't they? Mm. A lovely old opposition to play.
I'm not convinced by Spain. Like, I'm a bit disappointed with them so far.
I'd say it was a Philippe Auclair during the week. It's like, I think they're all right up front and they're all right in defence.
Yeah.
They're a great finisher.
I thought they turned up last night.
They were very good.
Against Austria.
Yeah.
Time for me to start playing.
Very nearly scored.
He came out speaking to the press and said he didn't like the group stages of the World Cup. And basically was saying, time for me to shine now. And he kind of got that vibe of me. He was like, right, I'm gonna start playing.
Yeah.
He did overplay quite a few times last night. He was trying his damnedest to turn and turn and then get a shot off and get the goal. You could tell he really wanted to score.
And he's like, everyone else has shown up. Every other elite forward in the world, I got to show it now. Mm. And he did, to be fair to him, he did. He was still doing his stuff, as a great Johnny Giles would once say.
It's going to be a repeat of the 2018 World Cup match between Spain and Portugal.
Yeah.
One of the best games at that tournament.
That was Ronaldo free kick.
Ronaldo free kick.
Yeah, I recall it well.
Hello, it's Owen Chehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves in questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
So after, like, let's say 10 or 15 minutes of this game, Spain against Austria.
Mm.
The commentator took an early opportunity to say, oh, you were all asking about a cat. And they duly obliged.
Yeah, so people who were watching the show yesterday would have seen that we spoke about Danny Murphy's cat Bob. And he, when he was younger, he jumped into the back of a Royal Mail truck and went away. And it was sad, really, Colm. Sad. And Danny Murphy took the opportunity to get back to some of the kind comments that he received during the week about Ball.
A lull in the game, so I think appropriate just very quickly, because our phones haven't stopped since our last commentary, when you told the story about your cat Bob.
Well, surprisingly, Steve, there was a lot of interest, which surprised us both. But yeah, he didn't actually die. We did get him back 6 or 7 weeks later. Unfortunately, he'd gone feral and we couldn't reintegrate him into the home. And he ended up living with my friend's parents in Preston. And that was the life he had. And now he is passed away, unfortunately, many years ago. Thanks for all the concern, those who have been messaging us.
R.I.P. Bob, after he passed away, seemingly this week, a national treasure.
Unfortunately, he gone feral. So why then, Seamus Flanagan, if that cat went feral, why did the cat go on to live with someone else? That's what I want to know. Why did he live with the friend's parents? Then he was feral.
He was shipping the book.
He was shipping the book. Oh, this cat's fine. Don't look at it. It's fine. And it took over him.
What were they doing to him in Royal Mail that he became feral?
And why did it take 6 or 7 weeks for it to get back to him as well?
That's just what the cat's supposed to do.
So I'll get back to you in a while.
So customs. Danny Murphy is actually, he's from Chester.
Okay.
Preston is 40 miles from Chester.
Wow.
That's a long way to drop a cat off, isn't it? Especially a feral one.
There are some theories here emanating from the proximity of the production box, with Charlie saying, well, perhaps the friend's parents themselves were feral.
Oh.
And so the cat quite aligned with the family values.
I confirmed
the
night.
We'll need more of that. And also, I saw a shout online that there should be a prequel now to find out the origins of this cat story beforehand. But this
The Athletic will do a piece on it.
This is taking this is taking Danny Murphy to a whole level of fame, Seamus.
I'm jumping on the bandwagon. I'm here for it. 100% I'm here for it.
30 paragraphs from The Athletic on the cat's background and how there's more feral cats in Preston than anywhere else. Why that is.
You enjoying this World Cup?
Do you know what I am? Because we're touching on Lamine Yamal.
Yeah.
Everyone's turning up.
Mm.
All you want is the big players turning up.
I don't remember it like this.
I never remember a World Cup like this. Ever. You always have last... Think back to last year's World Cup. Mbappe, Messi was their World Cup. Both of them battling it out. Everyone is turning up. Goals that some of these guys are getting and it's unbelievable. And I know there's been a lot of... There's a narrative around it that it's all negative and this and that. I think it's just been phenomenal.
Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal. And the crowds that are attending, like to fill out these stadiums, I think it's incredible for every game. Like there's not been one game that I've watched where there's been empty seats or there's been people leaving early. I think it's unbelievable.
There were a few games early on, but I think since then, it's gotten, and some of the stadiums are amazing.
Insane.
Amazing. Like,
insane.
You don't really appreciate it when you're watching NFL games because it's the standard.
Yeah, 100%.
For them to look like that. But when you drop it into a Football World Cup, you're like, oh my God. I think the thing about the superstars showing up as well, superstars are showing up, but then the superstars within the teams are showing up as well. So like, look at France. You kind of thought maybe one would get drowned out amongst the chaos because there's so many good players. But they're all playing class. They're all showing up.
Oh, they're so good, France, though. Oh, they're just so, so good.
Who's going to stop them? Like?
Who is stopping them?
Themselves. That's all I can think of.
Yeah.
They don't show up in a game. I don't know. Like,
I don't see it happening, though.
Not really. But again, actually, Philippe Leclerc was saying about his own country, I suppose. He's a bit worried about the defence.
Mm.
So you could have Spain on their day getting to them, because they're due to play in the semi-finals, aren't they? That's going to be the clash, Spain-France.
Spain-France.
Right.
And then Argentina, if the 10 lads do your man a job to help them out, maybe on their day, maybe. Yeah, but it's hard to see, because like England look very unconvincing. Portugal look, fairly unconvincing. Like that first half yesterday, nothing happened at all. And then it got going. And Croatia just feel to me like they're playing way beyond their peak.
Yeah,
than they used to be, and they're still quite decent.
Yeah, but they have been doing that for the last three World Cups.
I know. It always feels like they're ancient, don't they?
Actually, something that needs to be mentioned as well is Switzerland. How Switzerland go under the radar for predominantly the whole tournament, get to the last 16, and will take a scalp predominantly, and then they'll get knocked out. But no one, I genuinely don't think I've watched a Switzerland game until they get knocked out. I've watched none of their group games. I've watched none of their of any of their games in the build up to it. They're the most under the radar team.
It's a great.
We were actually speaking about this outside earlier on. The three things that Switzerland are good at: chocolate,
skiing,
banking, and being the most pointless team at a World Cup. They just get through the knockout stages, then just get immediately knocked out.
That is, in essence, all that happens. Yeah, as well.
They don't make a dent in the World Cup.
Never, ever make a dent. Never.
And I'll tell you how they make a dent: in the shape of Ricardo Rodriguez, because he always shows up with his ponytail.
He's number 13. He's great. I love him.
He's still probably about 26. I don't even know what age he is, but he's always, he played 2006 World Cup. I'm almost certain he was their left back. This guy has been going forever.
Is he still at
Wolfsburg? That's what I love about
him. Still at Wolfsburg, isn't he?
I don't care where he goes. I don't care who he plays for during the week. I just want to know at the World Cups.
I saw something online. It was like, someone tweeted and it was like, I'm not sure if any of these Switzerland players have a club. They just turn up for their country in the World Cup. And I was like, that is exactly what happens.
Do you know when you look up a player and it generally says their club first? Ricardo Rodriguez is a Swiss professional footballer. He plays as a left back for the Switzerland national team. That's it.
That's because he got onto Johnny Wikipedia and was like, make this Switzerland heavy.
Switzerland did have an impact at this World Cup. And it came in the form of the best commentary / tweet of the World Cup, which was... somebody tweeted it with the caption of how I describe a Toblerone to somebody who's never had it. And the commentary is just neat little Swiss triangles. But they're playing them all out.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. Like they actually have a lot to say for themselves, Switzerland. You know what I mean? So today's games, right? What's tickling your fancies here? I mean, I know the answer
there's
to
only
the
one
question
game.
Because it's a bit of an appetizer. Would you skip this or would you go to the main course, Seamus? Australia versus Egypt at 7 p.m.
Skip.
You just have the main? No, the main is tasty. 11 p.m. though.
Yeah.
Argentina against Cape Verde.
That's what it's all about.
Oh. Gabo Verde.
I see the headline today. Pico's mom. What was her rallying cry to Messi?
Leave him alone.
You leave him alone.
Yeah.
But I can't remember the headline. But the headline was good this morning. That's tasty.
Can't wait
your
for
dessert
that.
As well would be Colombia versus Ghana if you want to stay up.
That's a good game.
Tomorrow morning.
No, I'm going to a wedding this evening.
Oh. So
I'm wondering like what's the appetite going to be like at the wedding for those games?
Low.
So 7 o'clock you'll be probably having dinner.
No, I'm not going to the main.
Oh yeah.
Going to the afters.
No, I won't
travel up to
that.
You're
literally skipping the starter.
Yeah. So I reckon 11 o'clock. The Argentina game, that'll still be on. Who's going to be the real champs staying up for that Ghana game now at 2 o'clock? It might come down to the residence bar, whether that stays open.
Half two.
Nah.
Half two tomorrow morning. Do you think our boy will do a job at Messi? What did Phil say yesterday in the office?
People talking about it like he's man-marking him.
Phil say yesterday. Yeah,
cornerback.
Pico will be shouting, keep him on his right!
It will be some sight though. It's amazing.
Well, he plays right centre back, right? Pico.
Yeah.
For Cape Verde. Yeah. So Messi, he'll hopefully be over there and keep him away. Like, but he's going to run into him at some point.
At some point, yeah.
Messi does that kind of terrifying Messi thing where at the start of the game, he'll just walk around while the game is on and he'll just look at everyone and see who he can.
Just scanning.
Because you forget, like, what age Pico Lopez is.
What age is he?
He's like 34.
It's
if this World Cup had come 4 years earlier, might have got a big move like off this because he's playing very well at the back.
I know
he was at fault for the a couple of Uruguay goals, wasn't it? That you could probably label at his put at his door probably, but otherwise he's been pretty good. Like.
Do you think he's on Messi's radar? Does Messi know who Pico Lopez is?
Absolutely not.
No.
Scaloni's
going to do a tactical and he's going to be like, bye. You might have heard about this story of a guy. Maybe in passing.
Yeah,
but
that's what I mean.
Tom quickly scroll by. Like.
The more pressing question is like, does Messi still bother to do any prep on the opposition?
Pep Guardiola said there was no talking to me about Barcelona. Just leave him off.
I don't know. I'd say he does his own stuff, surely. He's not just going out there and playing.
He just oozes that.
Playing what's in front of him just every day.
Maybe, yeah.
Well, I don't know.
I'd say so. I think he could maybe get a quick note about who's the weakest and then he'll challenge them. But like, look, he's not playing the Messi that's going to dribble around you.
No,
he's playing the Messi that's going to pick a pass. Mm-hmm. But you have to be worried about that equally.
Put a ball
it's pretty exciting,
you.
Though, isn't it?
Like, good.
We actually have a full night of League of Ireland fixtures. I'm with the only Irish player at this World Cup, like playing against Lionel Messi for Cape Verde. So tonight, actually, there is a full round of games in there. So we have live commentary on News Talk of Shelburne against Dundalk with Stephen Doyle. So other games tonight, 7:45, Derry City against Waterford, Pats against Galway, we got Sligo Rovers against Shamrock Rovers, Drogheda against Bowes, and that Shell's Dundalk game starts at 8. Those first four start at 7:45. And just a check in there on the table, so Shell's are midway down mid-table. Shamrock Rovers, though, top, 47 points, 7 points clear of Bowes in second, Pats in third. Feels like the race is run already, and Pico Lopez is going to come back to another title-winning side.
My taxi driver this morning was a massive Rovers fan, and he was talking about tonight's game as important as the qualifier coming next week. And he's travelling over to that as well.
Wow.
So it's a big day for Rovers. Wow, it's a big weekend for Rovers altogether. Like,
massive. Unbelievable. So that's 11 p.m. tonight. World Cup. Argentina against Cape Verde. So, Shane O'Donnell. Our own Will O'Callaghan spoke with him yesterday. Will we play that and then chat about him afterwards?
Let's go for it.
Kind of a weird time, Shane. People are probably aware this is going to be your last All-Ireland semi-final come what may. You've made the decision end of the season that you're going to finish up.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a tough decision, obviously. Number of kind of factors at play, but yeah, look, I think the time has kind of come. It's never going to be as cut as dry as, yeah, definitely going to be, I have to finish. It's never going to be like that. But yeah, I think the balance has kind of tipped over to just it being the right time to move on after this year.
You've been thinking about this for a while, though. Like, I think even after the 2024 final, and we're chatting to you, and you were having a consideration about going back in 25. You've injured your shoulder. You've had a few knee issues this year as well. Was that a factor? Because I know you were talking about going emigrating anyway.
Yeah, it's kind of been, like I said, it's me more balanced trying to just decide, like, is the opportunity cost of continuing to play? At what point does it tip over to be like, I'm kind of putting things too much on hold, or I'm sacrificing kind of not being able to move on to the next kind of stage of things that I want to go on and kind of do. So, yeah, at a certain point, I think it just tips over. And this year, I think it's been clear for me from early stage of the year that I was going to kind of move on after this year. I kind of had the thoughts about it a couple of years ago of like trying to figure out when that moment to be. Then obviously we won in 2024, and that kind of just, yeah, obviously that changes things. But even like if we have a situation where I win this year, like it's just that point has kind of well and truly tipped now. So yeah, it'll be the last couple of days out with Clare.
That's Clare. Shane O'Donnell speaking with our own Will O'Callaghan yesterday ahead of the All-Ireland semi-finals with the big announcement that he will step away from the game after the season. Shane O'Donnell, Seamus, just turned 32 a matter of weeks ago.
Strange. But you know what? When you look at it from his point of view, and it probably speaks to like a wider kind of conversation about people, when you're playing a sport, you're so invested in that sport that there is nothing else outside of that sport when you're playing it. And I was in that bubble for years where you see people going to weddings and traveling and doing this. It doesn't even come into your consciousness that that exists outside of it. And then when you're out of it, you're saying, oh, I was so brainwashed while I was in it that there was nothing else outside of it. But he strikes me as the type of character that he realizes that, and he's been in it, he's been out of it, he's missed league. I'd say he's kind of flirted with that idea for a while. He strikes me as that type of a guy that has flirted with the idea of could potentially take it or leave it. And obviously being so talented, when he does come back, he's such a massive addition to Clare and will be such a big loss to Clare. But he is obviously, like, he has aspirations. I know he's spoken before about, you know, what he wants to do after the game, and, you know, we'll touch on it there, like in terms of immigrating and stuff. Like, that's not feasible when you're playing the game. When you get to that stage of, you know, I always say 30 is a big landmark, but when you get to that 31, 32 and it's on the horizon and you're saying, okay, what am I sticking around for? Like, he's won what he's won. He's won everything he could possibly win, obviously bar a Munster title. Is that going to keep him up at night? Probably not.
Would that attitude annoy other players?
This is the thing. See, some players have that mindset. Like, he's in the same dressing room as Tony Kelly. And Tony Kelly is hurling obsessed. And there is no life outside of hurling for Tony Kelly. Like, I've met the man before. I've had conversations. It is just hurling. That's all that exists. And that's fine. That's what gets him out of bed in the morning, and he strives for that. And my cousin plays in the same team as him with Ballier, and it's the same when he goes back to the club. That is who he is. He's where he's heart in his sleeve. It's hurling, hurling, hurling with Tony Kelly. That strikes me as it's not the case with Shane O'Donnell. Not that it would annoy someone, because again, like, as in when he's in there, obviously Shane O'Donnell is doing everything that every other player is doing. So in terms of annoying him, probably not. But it's just, I suppose, his outlook on the game. And to be honest, I have to admire it, because it's like, there is more to life. Like, yeah, everyone finishes up the game at a different time. And some people get so caught up in the game. Like, people, and I've chatted about this before, people pick their career based on playing hurling. Like, how many players, and I know personally players that are involved in primary school teaching and are, have no inclination of staying as a primary school teacher past their hurling days. And you hit that age bracket and you retire or you step away and you're like, what am I doing? What am I doing with my life at 34, 35 years of age? And you're like, I have to have a whole rethink. So I would say hats off to him. He knows what he wants. He is where he wants to be in his personal life. And now obviously his hurling career is tapering off. He's deciding to step away, which is a positive that he gets that opportunity to say, I'm stepping back.
That'd be a worry for hurling. Like, are people getting, like, top hurlers, are they getting enough back from hurling in the modern game?
100% not. 100% not. Like, if you said to me, you're going into a career and you're saying to yourself, like, and I suppose I'm privy to that because I did it. Mm. You know, I studied in UCD for 4 years to become a radiographer and then pivoted career for hurling because I was, whether it was night shifts, weekend shifts, on call, wasn't able to balance that. Then obviously had a small family at home and I was saying, okay, to facilitate hurling, more so than family at home, I'm going to pivot career and I'm going to do something that will facilitate hurling. Mm. And that's exactly what people do when they go into teaching. It's to facilitate their hurling career. And it's to, I'll be off for the summer months when it counts. It's not overly taxing. It's not overly stressful. I finish every day at 3, 4 o'clock. I can go get my bite to eat. I can do my recovery in the afternoons. When I'm not training, I'm getting my recovery done because I'm off for the full evening. I'm off for Christmas. I'm off for Easter. I'm off for Halloween and I'm off for the summer. So you turn around and you look at it and you're saying to yourself, you finish your career and you're like, where do I stand now?
Yeah.
And that's, for me, in the grander scheme of things, that's the worry, is that you have how many hurlers that finish playing hurling that are in a career that they don't particularly enjoy, that now it's not facilitating sport. So is there a massive void left by hurling? That would be my concern.
If you weren't dropped from the panel, would you play as long as possible?
See, my mindset would have been when I was in there, yeah, 100% play until my body gives up.
But I know you think differently now.
Yeah, and it's funny because when it's taken from your life, yeah, in my circumstance, but also when you step away, you're like, wow, there's more to life. There is genuinely more outside there. And it's funny because I remember looking at Brian Fenton. I would have got kind of friendly with him through social media and then would have met him a couple of times. Like, he was out living his best life.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, he was telling me he went to Oz and he never got to do that as a player. Like, he was saying to me, and I was the same, never got to do a J1. So missed out on all of that. You know, never got to do Oz. He did all of that post his career. Won what he won, obviously, super successful. And it's easier when you're successful, 100%. Like, even for myself, when you have that little bit of success, it's definitely, you can take that a little bit easier when you do step away. Shane will be the exact same as that. But you miss out on so much as a player. Much as a player. And not that there's resentment after the fact, but like, if you were to play till TJ Reid's age at 38, 39 years of age, like, the opportunity to travel and to do all of that and do what Brian Fenton did is probably taken off the cards.
Do you think there's guilt foisted upon people like Brian Fenton and Shane O'Donnell who have won it all and they're stars of the game, and people's inherent response when they hear that these guys are walking away kind of early is, you're walking away too early, you're giving it away, you have loads more years left in you. Yeah. Almost like you have this gift and you should use it. And there's people in this country who would kill to have what you have and you're just kind of going to take it or leave it.
How many times have you heard it about Brian Fenton? You know, they need him, or what's he doing step away? He's disowning Dublin football and he's leaving Dublin football in a really bad place because he's stepping away. Like, this man has done what for Dublin football over how many number of years?
Yeah.
Will probably go down in the same echelon as, like, Brian Mullins. And
I don't know why I'm forever surprised about the fact that, like, you know, we had Niall Morgan on the show there during the week and, like, they just got knocked out Tyrone. And I don't know why this surprised me, but that the complete normal life of, like, he went to a wedding after the game and he's playing golf the other morning, he's teeing off. Yeah. And, like, Shane O'Donnell, I always got the sense of it. I mean, this is the greatest respect possible. We had the man on the show, always got the sense, kind of take or leave it.
Yeah.
But he loves it, obviously, and he's amazing at it. And I'm sure winning the All-Ireland for Clare was absolutely amazing. But at the same time, I always got the sense, like, oh, there's more to life.
Yeah, and even like when he's talking about afterwards, like, as in, I know there's this big thing, and I know he's spoken about it, and I've spoken to him about it as well, in terms of, like, the going to space and this getting blown up, whatever. But, like, I genuinely think that, like, maybe that aided his game as well, the fact that he was so blasé about the sport he was playing, that aided him in performing at the top.
But there's a lot level. He said for that, isn't there?
Do you know that mindset of like, I'm probably more career, like he's probably more career driven than hurling driven. I think that aids your hurling career because you're so...
Well, it's so, right? Is that a personality type, right? Because then you have someone like Roy Keane who says, Roy Keane's motivation throughout his whole career was the fear of not making it, the fear of not being good enough. That was his thing. Then you have someone like this who's the opposite. It was like, I could kind of take or leave this sport. And both actually, I'm talking about Shane O'Donnell and Roy Keane in their respective fields, both went the distance.
Very successful.
Completely different approaches.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to me.
It kind of comes down to, like, how do you compartmentalize things? Like, I definitely think that he's able to put a result into the context of his life, and that makes a big difference. But, I mean, it's more prominent and more prevalent, and you see it more, and it sort of, it's more obvious to us when a county player is like this. But you see this as much at club level as you do in county level, where there's lads who choose club over going, like going abroad for the J1 or even moving to Dublin for a career. They might just, all they care about is playing a bit of GAA, staying local, taking a local job so they can play for the GAA and just being a club man their entire time. And then you get other people who want to see things and do things and go for their career, and they have to make that decision too. So I don't think what Shane O'Donnell is doing is unusual in an Irish context at all. I think it's just more obvious to us because it's a county player.
And that's like that's a great synopsis of it, because that's the reality. And yet it still kind of shocks me because he's only 32. That's my first instinct.
Yeah,
which is kind of irrational. It's like, sure, what, he doesn't know anyone anything.
No, and
it's not his. He doesn't get paid for this. Not his job.
No, but like to end this point there as well, in terms of like, you know, players leaving and it being your whole life, and like, yeah, there's definitely club players, but like even in, I suppose, the intercounty scene is more prominent, and it's more, I suppose, you see it and you're shocked by it more. But like some of these players, when they do stop, it's an identity crisis. It's genuinely an identity crisis of who am I? Because I was always Seamus Flanagan the hurler. You're walking down the street, it's Seamus Flanagan the hurler, not Seamus Flanagan the person or the father or the clubman or the whatever.
What do you get now?
Ah, oh, Seamus Flanagan the pundit, which is...
Different tone.
somber. No, but
Seamus,
it's like,
Flanagan off the ball.
But do you know what I mean? There is that genuine identity crisis of I was known as this for so long. You've nearly become this character and this caricature character of what everyone told you you were, and you were put in this box of being this. And you come out of it, you're like, I've kind of formed my whole life around this sport.
Are we veering towards the ceiling in terms of how committed top GAA players are? That they need to be. Because look at their conditioning. Everyone looks phenomenal. Everyone looks professional.
Yeah.
And none of them are.
Yeah, and we spoke about at the top of the show as well about, you know, retirement age and where Shane O'Donnell's coming from. But like, there's going to be some, I'm going to say 20-year-old in Clare, that will come in with potentially a better physique than Shane O'Donnell, potentially quicker than Shane O'Donnell, potentially more hurling than Shane O'Donnell. So in terms of that age bracket, like in terms of professionalism, you'll probably see that retirement age drop down the way, because you've youth coming through that are trained the same way as a senior grade at 18, 19, 20, that can seamlessly fit in to a senior setup. So therefore, a lot of maybe your older age bracket, that their legs might be caught or injuries might be catching up, and we'll touch on it there. You know, Shane picked up shoulder injuries, knee injuries and all of that, which kept him out. You're going to see 20-year-olds coming in full fit, can go game after game, league game after league game, championship game after championship game, in-house game after in-house game. Pop him in. And you start pushing out that older age bracket.
We'll preview the two semi-finals later in the show with yourself, but on Shane O'Donnell himself, you've shared a pitch with him, albeit at opposite ends, but can you talk to us and to everybody about what made him so great? Like an insight that maybe we wouldn't get from just watching him from the sidelines.
I suppose, do you know what it is? I was always blown away by his movement and how he... Personally, for me, the way he moved in between the lines. So he could play inside and be that devastating inside. They used to play 2 men inside and Dan used to pick him up. I remember one day in Clare, if you ever saw him, I always talk about Aaron Galland and the way that Aaron Galland used to catch a ball, and it was on a half turn. So when he was catching it, he was gone on a half turn and swung. So he, instead of catching it in front, landing and having to turn, he was catching it on a half turn. So when he landed, he was gone the opposite direction. So the back that was trying to contest with him landed and had to turn. So Aaron was always sealing that yard. Shane O'Donnell was the same. but he was doing when the ball was getting delivered along the ground. So if you ever watch his game, a normal inside forward, myself, I'd go out, first touch it, the man didn't turn. Shane O'Donnell was on a half turn with the ball coming in and was catching it as it was bouncing along the ground on that half turn. And he could turn so quickly. And then on top of that, he was just the hungriest man for goals. Everything was, goal is option A, goal is option B, goal is option C, and if not, I'll wheel around. And then on top of that, I'd say the third factor about him was his selflessness. He was the most selfless player that I'd seen on the pitch. He'd get more of a buzz off of setting up a score than taking a
score. Yeah.
And like, do you remember it when he scored 3-3 in that Ireland final against Cork? Like, just thrown into absolute stardom. Clear win that at Ireland. But if you remember back, his years after that, I'd say consecutive years, maybe 2, 3, 4 years after that, he turned into this player that knew he was going to be targeted. So turned into this playmaker and would just win that primary position like I was talking about and just lay it off. And like, there was games there. I remember there was one game, I think in 2018, my first year in the panel. I remember we did a video analysis on Clare and he contributed to 8 scores and didn't score himself in a game. I think it was Clare versus Cork in the first round of the 2017 championship, and we played him in 2018, and that was one of the stats that came up, and I was like, that's bananas. But he got nearly got more joy out of being that playmaker.
Mm. Is being goal hungry more rare than you'd think?
Not in today's game, because you see Cork, and Cork are that team that are goal hungry. You see him against Offaly. It's harder now because
if plan A and plan B is the same,
yeah,
they both mean goal.
Yeah.
It sounds like it puts them into a rare enough breed.
It is, because I suppose in today's game, it's like my game was always pick a ball, wheel out, and kind of that back foot shot that taken off, because I knew the way that my game was, I probably didn't have that turn of pace in terms of like, it would take me 3, 4, 5, 6 yards to get up to my top speed, where Shane O'Donnell was literally turn and he's there. He just, that turn of foot was there. But see, that aided him in what his game plan was. That aided him in being able to say goal is my number one option, because I probably 9 times out of 10 have the beating of a man for pace.
Will we ever see a player like him again? Like, in terms of his movement, he's like such a like unique shape about him, and he's ferocious when he's getting through a tackle. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen a player like him, but we may never see
again. And if you think about like even what he added to his game as well, was like his aerial ball. Like, for such a small man, his leap was off the charts. How he could paw a ball and come down. And I think he had it all, genuinely, as an inside player. But my big thing for him was the way that he could move between the lines. He could play inside and then drift out to the half line and be an option for that puck out. Like, if you remember back when he came on against Tipperary down in Ennis last year, they lost to Tipperary.
Yeah.
He came on, and a first ball, Avery Culligan planted down top of him, and he came out over Brian O'Mara and pawed it over and slapped it over the bar. And I was like, that's what he offers.
Yeah.
And that was in the half, and then he drifts on inside again. So being able to fluctuate between those two lines definitely aided in his game, because you're saying, does my fullback come out and pick him up, or does my halfback then drop back when he goes back inside? Creates that massive dilemma.
Serious bit of stock about him as well, like, for a small lad.
Oh, he was
absolutely.
He was kind of maybe it's not the right word, but compact.
Mm,
he was small, but he was lean, and I think he had it all.
On the subject of retirements, we have Cristiano Ronaldo clarifying
all right
on his sister's comments. So this is him talking. So Fabrizio Romano is carrying these. So just bear in mind that it's coming from Cristiano's own mouth. Retirement. Cristiano's future is not what matters at this moment. I will talk about it later. I will have enough time, whether after a win or loss. I will speak with my family and then make a decision in the way that I see fit. So Cristiano will make his decision at some point.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Off the Ball Breakfast is with Braeburn. Whether the Irish summer is a scorcher or serving up some summer showers, Braeburn Coffee has the perfect iced coffee, from refreshing ice mochas to ice lattes. Whatever the weather, Braeburn Coffee has you covered, available exclusively at Apple Green, made for your summer. We do have a Braeburn question this Friday morning.
Ooh.
WhatsApp only. You can win a €100 Braeburn voucher. You have to text us 087-918-8180 on WhatsApp. The question is, this Sunday/Monday morning, England will take on Mexico in the last 16 in the Azteca Stadium. And our question is, how high up above sea level is the Azteca Stadium?
You have to get it to the meter.
To the meter.
To the meter. These are supposed to be easy, aren't they?
Google is free. Nobody's saying you don't have to, you're not allowed to use Google for these questions. So text us 087-918-8180 on WhatsApp, and answer that Braeburn question, you could win a 100 euro Braeburn voucher.
Lovely. Is Hurling in trouble? Are you buying into this?
100%.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
This has happened fast, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's 100% in trouble. And the only reason that people think it's not is because Munster Hurling had that band-aid, closed up that wound of how bad hurling was for years. Years. It's massively in trouble. And I think it's even been brought to kind of more prominence because of how good the football championship has been and how the rules and
yeah.
system changes has just reinvigorated football. Oh, there's so much scope to make hurling better. There's so much scope to grow the game. And like, I just think, and I've seen Willie Marr was on the show, he's just facing an uphill battle by what the championship and the structure of the championship, by how we've implemented that structure and how we're continuing to go with the same structure. Something has to change. It really has to change. Like I saw James O'Connor talking and he was saying about how if we have two poor semi-finals this weekend, and not that you're praying for two poor semi-finals, but if you had two decent semi-finals and a good final, how everyone will gloss over and it'll be the last.
Forget about the rest of the season.
Forget about the rest of the season.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to ask. Like, is that not part of the problem that with hurling, like if we go in now semi-final, first semi-finals 4-18 to 3-12, mm-hmm. and then the next one is 2-32 to 3-11. Like people were like, oh, the hurling season.
That's exactly.
It's amazing.
That's exactly what.
It's incredible.
Happen. That's exactly what. And then you'll have a quality final, and people will say, but that's four teams that are like, you look across the football, you had four quarterfinals that were epic. Mm. Epic quarterfinals. You had round robin, or you had games before that were epic. If you have two games in a season, three games potentially, that are good games, that can't be the defining factor of your season.
Do you think Kilkenny being bad might be a saving grace, or be the saving grace? Because you can't lose Kilkenny, like, in the overall picture.
In terms of garnering change?
Yeah, as in, if they're in a bad spot and continue to be in a bad spot, something's got to change. A team like that.
You'd hope so. And then I suppose the likes of, see, like Waterford, a team that get glossed over all the time.
But, yeah.
And they're in a real poor spot. But in terms of like, okay, you tie back to growing the game. You want to grow the game. Okay, Waterford. They played 11 weeks of competitive hurling this year. They started on the first weekend of February and finished the last weekend in May of games. And you have the likes of Callum Lyons that came back last year and that said he's going to try his lot in with Waterford this year again. Where's the benefit of him sticking around for Waterford hurling? But in terms of growing the game then, how do Waterford people and young boys and girls in Waterford say, oh, I'm going to watch my team this weekend? They've watched what? How many championship games did they watch? Three?
Yeah.
Knocked out. And you're saying to yourself, okay, that's us for another year. Back to the club. They've suffered the worst since the round robins come in since 2018. They have not made it out of Munster since 2018. Stark.
Yeah.
And then you look at the stats coming out, 55 football games between Telchen and the All-Ireland series, Sam Maguire, 5 hurling games.
Yeah.
That can't continue.
In the same time frame.
And you want to grow the game? How does that make sense? But then on that point, I don't know if the GAA are brave enough to make that call.
Charlotte Byrne says 20 years it'll take. 20 years for the rest of the country to catch up.
No.
The problem with hurling, it's too difficult for people sometimes. It's a really hard sport to get good at.
Hasn't always been the way, though.
And we're doing nothing to grow. We're doing nothing to change.
But there's an acceptance.
Do you know what? That's exactly what it is. Yeah. It's an acceptance that, oh, it's a hard game and you have these top...
There's no culture of it in certain counties.
Yeah, 100%. But that has to change by having these counties involved later in the championship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you get knocked out of Munster, that shouldn't be the end of your year.
No way. No way. Like, are you telling me that Waterford wouldn't have made a dent in the All-Ireland season if they got a backdoor into it? 100%.
Mm.
Are you telling me that Kilkenny wouldn't have been able to fix some of the problems? Tipperary wouldn't have been able to fix some of their problems? If you gave them 2-3 weeks off and punished them for finishing fourth and fifth in Munster, but that they come back into the All-Ireland series at some stage. Like, look at who was this... was it Loud and Dublin? Like, are you telling me that Dublin wouldn't be where they are after playing so many games? Like, they got relegated out of the league, beaten out of the Leinster Championship, and now they're in the All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah.
The Waterford in-laws would be delighted to hear that they could have done well anyway. I'll tell them that. We'll go on.